It wasn't either of the people who recorded it, and there was nobody else in that wing of the building. So we don't really know what that was. But yeah, it was this kind of growl.
Welcome to Paranormal Isles. I'm your host, Angus King. Join me as I explore supernatural occurrences in Aotearoa, New Zealand.
To be quite honest, it's got me stumped. I cannot explain it, and both of us saw the same thing.
Oh, I mean, there was a time many years ago that if you asked me, do I believe in ghosts or do ghosts exist? And I would say, well, I really don't know. I don't know. But now I can with confidence say, yeah, they do. They do exist.
This podcast contains paranormal themes and details of true life atrocities and may not be suitable for all listeners. Discretion is advised. In this episode, we are joined by paranormal experts Tracy Royce from the Quantum Foundation and Barbara Casely from Haunted New Zealand. We thank them for sharing their first-hand experiences. Atop the ridgeline of Otago Peninsula, standing ominously since 1874, is Larnach Castle. Hauntingly atmospheric, the eccentric building and surrounds are drenched in tragedy and scandal. As you enter the grounds, often engulfed in mist, it has an almost bewitching quality, like you have stepped over the threshold into a different world, a different time. And given its cursed history, it's like you've entered a real-life Gothic novel. Once inside, its meticulous period detail is truly awe-inspiring, with hand-carved ceilings, stained glass windows, a tower looking out to the ocean, and the breathtaking hanging staircase. It's like it hasn't changed since first being built. When you walk through each room, all been adorned with the antiques of the time, many belonging to the original owner, you feel as if you were a spirit trespassing in their world, like you could turn a corner at any moment and bump into them. So join me as together we delve into the history of this truly ghostly location. Australian-born businessman and politician William Larnach was on an extended holiday in Europe when he was appointed manager of the Bank of Otago in New Zealand. Along with his wife Eliza and their four children, Donald, Douglas, Kate and Colleen, and Eliza's younger half-sister Mary, they arrived by ship, docking in Dunedin in September 1867. Larnach had a keen eye for business and accumulated his wealth through the acquisition of property and investing in the booming timber industry. In 1870, the successful entrepreneur bought a piece of land on the Otago Peninsula and began building an impressive mansion, which he called The Camp. Larnach, being of Scottish descent, had a grand vision of how he wanted his estate to look. It was to be a blend of Scottish baronial and Gothic revival style architecture, which makes this a unique and monumental landmark. Building materials from all over the world were used to construct the family estate. Italian marble, Glasgow brick, Venetian glass, and Marseille cobbles. No expense was spared in its opulence. The impressive stone building, not technically a castle, was more a majestic manor house. On its completion in 1874, a local newspaper wrote about the mansion, referring to it as Larnach Castle, and the name remained. The castle complex comprised of 47 rooms, and the Larnach family employed no less than 46 servants for the homestead. The 300-acre farm hosted vines, a cow barn, stables, and of course servants' quarters. Everyone who was anyone in the greater Otago area knew about the colossal compound. The 3,000-square-foot ballroom with its North Island kauri beams and local Caversham sandstone was in fact built for Larnach's children, and the first celebration hosted there was Colleen's 21st birthday. In 1879, Larnach was appointed a companion to the Order of St. Michael and St. George by Queen Victoria. This great honour was bestowed on citizens of the British Empire, acknowledging them for their good work. Unfortunately, William Larnach's life was not all about great wealth and bliss. After having two more children, Alice and Gladys, his wife, Eliza, sadly died of a stroke in 1880, aged only 38. William was away on business in Australia at the time of her death and was clearly devastated. As a matter of practical arrangement, William married Eliza's half-sister Mary shortly after her death. His children did not approve of the union, and the staff also found it odd, as Mary was not a very pleasant person. Staff called her a drunken wench. Sadly, Mary would not live to see 40 either, and after only 5 years of marriage, she died of blood poisoning in Wellington Hospital after a small medical procedure. Sadly, he also lost his beloved daughter Kate at a young age in 1891 when she was 29 due to typhoid. William threw all of his energy into his political career and spent more time away from home. But at the age of 57, the wealthy landowner was ready for love again and married his third wife, Constance de Bathe Brandon. She was only 35, similar in age to William's children. The older William got, the more he seemed to struggle to hold on to his fortune and happiness. A year after becoming director and major shareholder of Colonial Bank of New Zealand, the bank collapsed and William was declared bankrupt. From there on out, everything went downhill for the once was industrious mogul. The final nail in the coffin was when he learnt about his young wife's affair with one of his sons. So, on the 12th of October, 1898, the 65-year-old Larnach confounded himself in a committee room at Parliament and ended his life with a gunshot to the head. Tragically, his eldest son Donald also killed himself in the same fashion in 1910. Larnach's death caused discord within the family, and a dispute over his unsigned will ensued. Larnach Castle was thus sold in 1906 to the Crown and became a lunatic asylum, and also later caring for shell-shocked soldiers. At the end of the Great War, she was abandoned and fell into disrepair, with local sheep taking up residence in the dilapidated ballroom. Another two owners later, during World War II, it became home to billeted American soldiers. When they left, the manor fell completely into rack and ruin, until it was bought in 1967 by the Barker family, who proceeded to lovingly bring her back to life. Today, Larnach Castle is an award-winning hotel, attracting thousands to its well-kept gardens and magnificent views. With such a rich history, it is only natural that some spirits linger. It is believed that William's ghost keeps a close eye on everything. Eliza's ghost roams the halls upstairs, particularly the landing where it's believed she died. Many people, staff and guests, have reported the feeling of a nudge to the back while standing near the top of the stairs. One visitor emailed the hotel management once he was home to report an incident. He explained that he was in the music room, standing next to his wife, when they felt something push between them. We stayed where we were, and it happened a second time. Then my wife moved, and I stayed in the same spot, wondering if it would happen again, and it did. But this time the wall unit next to me started a slight creaking rocking at the same time. William's spirit is said to frequent the spaces he loved the most when he was still alive, the ballroom and the library. People who have spent time at the castle have reported wafts of cigar smoke and the strong smell of port. Barbara Casely has been to the expensive estate on many occasions.
Although it's beautifully decorated and, you know, the antiques and the furniture are amazing to look at, it's still a very masculine building. It was clearly decorated and built for a man. Even the bedrooms, even the ladies' bedrooms, there's nothing pretty or dainty about anything in that building. The ballroom, of course, is slightly different, but the castle itself is very, very masculine feel to it.
In 1994, local theatre company, Dunedin's Fortune Theatre, produced a play called Larnach, which they performed at the castle in the ballroom. Co-owner of the castle, Margaret Barker, recalled what took place on the night of the performance. "It was a night to remember. As the guests arrived, a terrible storm blew up from nowhere. The smoke from the fires blew back down the chimney so that you couldn't see and your eyes hurt. Hail crashed on the iron roof, so you couldn't hear. Doors mysteriously opened by themselves and it got very cold. In the play, just as Larnach shot himself, there was a blinding white light. Afterwards at supper, people were talking about the lightning strike as Larnach held a gun to his head. I said, 'Oh no, that was stage effects.' They asked the stage manager about it, and he said that it wasn't an effect. The lightning was real. In the end, Margaret concluded, I think that Larnach was present that night. He didn't like the play." Tracy and Barbara teamed up for an investigation of the castle, as well as the stables nearby, which has been renovated to serve as accommodation. They found a lot of paranormal activity and were able to confirm previous reports of sightings, such as an older Victorian gentleman, a younger woman, the sound of heavy furniture being dragged when they could not observe anything moving. Tracy and Barbara shared their experiences with us.
We investigated both the castle itself and the stables. We did capture on audio footsteps, and we have accounted for every single investigator on camera and where they were at the time, and they were all seated, so no one was moving. There was no one actually in the area where the footsteps were recorded. I can't explain that.
Barbara also recalls a curious incident soon after they arrived at the castle.
We did have an unusual experience actually in the hallway between the main castle and the ballroom. I and Tracy had talked about this area earlier in the day because we had both felt that it was suitably creepy. We both agreed that it had a definite feel to it. And as we walked down the hallway into the ballroom from the castle, I could smell a dog. And it was like, what is going on? You know, we shouldn't be smelling dog in a castle. And so the group that I was with at that time decided we were going to stop there and try and do some sort of communication with something that may have been there. And strangely, we did, while we were having that particular session, in the room next to the hallway in the castle, I had left an audio recorder. And believe it or not, while we were having our session, unheard by us, but heard when I reviewed my recorder, there was a dog's bark. We heard a dog bark. Like I said, we didn't hear it at the time. We definitely didn't hear it at the time. While I was talking to one of the senior staff members at Larnach Castle, she mentioned to me that on one particular night, she had been the night manager and she had been in charge of the dinner that night. She had left the dining room because she needed to get some tea towels and went through to whatever area they had the tea towels in. It was away from the rest of the group anyway. She had come back, was walking back through the castle when she saw very clearly a man standing by a doorway. He was wearing a black great coat. He had a top hat on and he was pulling on grey gloves. She was quite stunned by it. She'd heard stories about this man being seen but had never actually seen it herself. So she carried on. She was talking to staff later on about it, and several staff members had seen this particular man, same clothes, not always with the gloves though. But a couple of the staff members had actually mentioned that they had seen that man and that he had a big black dog with him. It turns out that the area that she saw him is the area where my recorder picked up the dog bark. when we started looking at the photos around the building of the families who had lived at Larnac Castle over the years, often there were pet dogs in the photo, in the family photos.
At the end of the overnight investigation, the paranormalists decided to turn in, and that is when Tracy had a personal experience of her own.
I was lying in bed, and as I've got a fringe, I was on my side, and I felt my fringe move. Now, keeping in mind a couple of weeks earlier, when I was in my own bed, I felt something on my forehead, and it was actually a spider. So having a phobia of spiders, I kind of slapped myself stupid at that point, thinking it was a spider. Sat bolt upright in bed and checked and made sure there was no spiders anywhere and lay back down again. And then my fringe got moved across to the side of my face, like so, left to right, about four times. And again, I slapped my head, lay back down, and then the same thing happened again. Someone just running their hands through my fringe and moving it off my forehead. It happened about three separate times, and it was about four strokes each time. And I was so tired, I just thought, oh, look, just, it's not my fringe falling over on its own. It's too heavy for that. I'm just going to sleep. I'm too tired for this sort of shenanigans.
Tracy went to sleep and nothing else happened. But the odd occurrence stayed with her, and she relayed it to her roommate.
And then the next morning, I woke up and we were packing, and I said to my roommate, damn, I swear someone was brushing my fringe out of my eyes and across my forehead last night. And there was just silence, and I looked at her and she was just standing there as white as a sheet with her mouth open, and she said, oh my God, that happened to me too. I was watching a movie and it happened twice.
Members of the Larnac family were laid to rest in the family mausoleum in Dunedin's Northern Cemetery. Well, all except for one of Larnac's sons. It's not sure whether it was Donald or Douglas, but presumably the one who had an affair with his wife. Over time, the mausoleum has become a place of dark fascination with local teens and students. It's been desecrated, and skeletal remains have been removed from its burial place, some strewn on the floor, others lost. There is a story of an anthropology student who had taken a skull with a bullet hole, most likely the skull of William Larnac, and kept it in his dormitory room. He denied that the skull was Larnac's and said that it had been given to him because of his academic interest. With no evidence of the skull being Larnac's, the charges were dismissed. Popular TV series Ghost Hunters International visited the castle, hoping to debunk the paranormal legends attached to it. However, while filming the episode, they captured something in the ballroom. An apparition, something that can only be described as a male ghost with a beard in Victorian clothing, bearing an uncanny likeness to Larnac. They also recorded the sound of bottles clanging and dishes rattling. They excluded any human movement or vibration being the cause of it, and it was deemed to be an anomaly. Castle director Deborah Price also mentioned that the fire alarm goes off sometimes for no reason. It is the type of alarm where one has to break the glass to trigger it, but every time, the glass is still intact. The fire service always arrive, but can never find what caused it. Deborah also said that the first time the alarm rang was on the anniversary of William Larnac's death. In fact, it was also the exact time of death, to the minute. Having stayed there myself, I can attest to its unnerving energy. Walking its mystical gardens during the day, to then approach the ominous tower bearing down, luring you to ascend the front steps, flanked by the ominous carved stone lions and eagles, is one thing. But when you step inside, and the sun sets and the night goes quiet, it's another story. Exploring the many corridors and rooms at night, one's chest tightens with an extreme heightening of the senses. It truly feels as if you have slipped through a crack in time, and at any minute, you will come face to face with William Larnac himself. Staying there, one is eerily aware of the cursed tragic history of the Larnach family. Most nights pass without a ghostly encounter, but would you dare stay there? Thank you for listening to Paranormal Isles. Myself and co-creator Sonia Lowe look forward to bringing you more episodes.